This is the DRF Players Podcast.
What's going on? It is Friday, May 8th. It's the DRF Players Podcast alongside Mike Hogan and special guest filling in Eric Wing. I'm Matt Bernier. Mr. Wing, welcome back. Thank you for filling in. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always fun to be. Well, this will be my first podcast with you, Matt. So I know Peter is an excellent host because he hosted the time I was here. So now I'll be judging you off to the side.
That's here. Fine. And at the end, I'd like to hear what the scores are on a scale. Is this 1 to 10? As if we're like Olympic judge, 9.2, 4.1?
Yeah, I always prefer the scholastic letter grades myself because that gives me the plus or minus to throw in there. But either way, I'll be making notes that don't all have entirely to do with matters of horse racing.
Entirely fine by me. I like that positive and constructive criticism. Hogan, how are you feeling today?
Doing well.
Good.
Doing
good. Well. Anything spectacular going on this weekend?
Mother's Day.
Mother's Day on Sunday.
Mother's Day on Sunday. It's also my dog's 15th birthday.
15. Wow.
Yeah.
How old is that in people years?
100 or something. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, how's he move around?
He's good.
Yeah.
He's good. I think I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast.
Teddy, correct? No, that's your boy. That's your boy's name is Teddy. What's your dog's name?
Sydney.
Sydney?
Sydney. Okay. Sydney with an I. Sydney, as in Sydney Poitier. Sydney.
Ah, yeah, all right. Yeah. All right.
He's a bit of a paddler. He runs, but he paddles when he runs.
Okay.
So he looks a little like, we've talked about St. Trinians.
Sure.
He looks a little like that.
So he didn't bring a lot at auction.
No.
Not a smooth mover.
No, not a smooth mover. But he can cover some ground. He still runs pretty good.
He can still get after it a little bit.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
We also happen to be
he's
three.
He's on the Lasix too, by the way.
Well, really? All right. Oh, yeah. He's got the meds.
Yeah. He went first Lasix about a year ago.
That's good. Prevents the we're not going to get into it. Also, three members here of the DRF Round Trippers, the Fantasy Baseball League.
Oh yeah.
This is one quarter of the league is in here right now, I believe. Eric is the leader. You are not leader overall, but of the three of us, you are ahead. Mike, you're in second. I am bringing up the rear at the moment.
Mike might have nosed in front of me last night. I had Corey Kluber for yet another atrocious start.
Woof.
Which is just killing my whip in ERA.
I think you're married to him now. You're not going to be able to trade him for fair value, and you can't really bench him. You're stuck with the guy.
I can bench him, but...
Well, you can.
I'm the manager. I can do whatever I want.
He comes out.
Yeah, I agree. He's a hard guy to trade. Talk about selling low.
Right.
So.
Right.
All right, so obviously Mr. Fornatel is not here. I believe he is up at Saratoga. But we've got the three of us. We're going to go through the four PH races. We'll do them in post-time order when they're supposed to go off. Before we get into it, real quick, Eric, I'm going to put you on the spot. Thoughts on the Derby overall?
Very formful race. Pretty much all the ones who were supposed to show up showed up, with the exception of Upstart, which I haven't heard anything about his status. But... really, other than the obvious that everybody stated 1,000 times, materiality was compromised by his trip. Frosted was compromised, perhaps, by trying to close into a slow pace. American Pharoah, Firing Line, and Dortmund all ran well. If you ran that race over again 10 times, I think those three would come close to splitting their decisions. I don't know if that's a shocking statement, but I thought all three ran well and close enough in ability to each other, at least as displayed on Saturday, that I don't think American Pharoah's a lock whatsoever in the Preakness, simply by virtue of the fact that I think either Firing Line or Dortmund could come get him if they both take part.
Well, I was going to kind of, that leads into the second part. Do you think that this, a lot of people are making it sound like this is just a foregone conclusion that we're going to be going to Belmont here in 4 weeks and there'll be a Triple Crown on the line. Do you agree?
No. I mean, we could.
Right.
If my life depended on the outcome of the Preakness, I'd have to be playing American Pharoah, but I guess Competitive Edge is now not running, so that makes it a little more likely. But I would take, if you gave me Dortmund plus Firing Line, I would take those two instead of American Pharoah.
I think it's perfectly reasonable. We talked about it a little bit on Tuesday that, we thought American Pharoah ran a really good race, but it doesn't mean that he has to win in Baltimore. It's not like it's an absolute slam dunk because those other two horses ran very well. And even if he does get through the Preakness, he's probably going to face Frosted again. He'll face Materiality if he doesn't run, or any of these other ones. I mean, there's no guarantee about any of this stuff. But
he might even face 2 weeks off.
Right. We'll see how he runs tomorrow in the Peter Pan. He's going to be stretching out from 7 to 9 furlongs. But I just think it's anything but a lock at this point.
Now, having said that, Baffert's terrific with Derby winners in the Preakness. And from a fanboy standpoint, I'd love to see another Belmont Stakes with a Triple Crown on the line. In my view, there's no greater sporting event than a Belmont Stakes with a Triple Crown on the line. It's better than, I've been to a Super Bowl, I've been to a World Series. It's better than any of that by a lot, just because you walk in the door knowing you have a chance at having history made. And there are very few sporting events where you could say that.
You really think about it. I was trying to run through my head, should we get to a scenario where a Triple Crown's actually won? I don't even know what the aftermath would look like, because it's been so, not only because it's been so long, but because so many things have changed from the media standpoint. How would it be covered? I mean, we see week in and week out that horses are trending on Twitter, and these are for, much lesser stakes events. I mean, I just can't. I'm trying to even think of how, if something were to happen, whether it's this year, next year, 5 years from now, whatever it is, how it would even look. I'm having a hard time kind of putting it together.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, you're from Boston.
Yeah.
So there's probably another sport you could use. Well, yeah, right. Okay, Massachusetts. Probably another sport you could use something that didn't happen for a long, long time that finally happened. We're talking about baseball, World Series for the Red Sox. I mean, obviously it wasn't as long a drought since we've had a Triple Crown winner. But, somebody wins a World Series every year. So I don't know. I mean, could it be as crazed as that?
Well, and I guess that's the thing. I mean, I think regionally, it was a big deal nationally when it happened, but regionally it was pandemonium for about a week. The difference now would be, I think this is on the national stage. It's not as though this is someone's home team that won. This is I think everyone, the general public, the people that aren't betting, I mean, they watch to see it happen. They don't watch to see, Materiality beat him and then you go cash a mutual ticket. They watch to see American Pharoah try to do it.
They didn't have any money on Birdstone, is what you're saying.
Exactly, right. Birdstone, or even last year, Tonalist. Right. It's not like the general public wasn't going to watch that.
I can give you some background from my years at the NTRA working the PR side during the Charismatic and Funny Side and Smarty Jones years. I'm going to skip on the Big Brown year because that was kind of a unique situation where it was hard to deal with the connections there. But in the three cases I did mention, there were plans in place for national media events in Times Square on the Monday after. The Monday after would be key. I mean,
right.
It's like with the Super Bowl MVP, national media tour, satellite media tour, that type of thing. And you try to keep the ball rolling as long and as far as you can. Now you have a superstar, and it depends, I guess in this case it has to be American Pharoah. So you're talking Bob Baffert's one of the few trainers who really is well known beyond the realm of horse racing. I might put Nick Zito in that mm-hmm. category. So I'm guessing Baffert would be the star of that media show, so to speak, were it ever to happen. I know we're way ahead of ourselves here. But you're right, back in 78, I mean, I was kind of young at the time. And it was a different media landscape back then. I don't remember too much about it. Plus, in 78 when Affirmed won it, it was the third Triple Crown in
6 years. 5 years. Yeah, right.
I mean, the talk was the thing was becoming too easy to accomplish. And
right.
Even though it was a terrific rivalry with Affirmed and Alidar, right. Which was unlike the Seattle Slough Triple Crown and largely unlike the Secretariat Sham, that was the greatest 1-2 rivalry probably of all time in horse racing. But like you say, I mean, most people got their news from the next day's paper back
right.
then. So,
and that's why I just think it would be so fascinating to see if it were to happen with this landscape that we have now, just what level would things get to? I mean, would it be, You know, and when I say that too, I don't necessarily mean, you know, all of a sudden would horse racing become, you know, the NFL. Like, that's not going to happen.
I can give you one anecdote. When I was in 04, I was managing PR for John Service.
Okay.
And as you all recall, when Smarty Jones was heading into Belmont, nobody was trying to jinx him, but everybody thought it was a certainty that the horse would win. He had just won the Preakness by 11 lengths. And so I got a call one day from the Tonight Show, and they wanted, when the horse won, they wanted Smarty Jones flown out and walked onto the set, you know, with Jay Leno, as if, I had to let him down easy for the, you know, dozens of reasons why that would never work,
right.
Mainly involving dollars and cents and breeding rights, but. You know, that I think it is indicative of what a star, a Triple Crown horse would be if we're lucky enough to see one before we all three pass away.
And like you say, we're talking as though we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
You still got to get through the Preakness in a week. And just for ha-has, before we dive into the PH races, yesterday the Wynn released their full odds for the Preakness right now that you can go and get involved with. And it's not, obviously, there are names on here that aren't going to run in the Preakness, but it's the same deal. It's a future bet, essentially. They're offering American Pharoah right now at 2-3. Those are his odds as far as what you can get at the book. Second choice, Firing Line 7-2. Dortmund third, 4-1. Carpe Diem 7. Materiality 9. Competitive Edge, we know he's not going to go, but he was 10. Danzig Moon 16. Divining Rod 20. Mr. Z 22. Stanford 25. Bodhisattva 28. Tale of Verve 35. And Grand Bailey 40. I think that sounds all about right. When it's all said and done, I think American Pharoah goes off in that 3-5 range.
And those are no refund bets, is that right?
Those are no refunds.
Okay.
Those are just essentially it's a future bet.
Right.
On the Preakness.
Right.
I would imagine Firing Line and Dortmund go off right around 9-2, 4-1.
Yeah.
And then you have a big chasm after that of whoever it is, even if Materiality, which I don't think he's going. If my heart of hearts, I don't think Pletcher's going to run him. If of the two, maybe he runs Carpe Diem, but even then, it's not a Todd move. So,
right.
I'll be surprised if he runs any of them until the day that Pletcher comes out and announces this is what we're doing. Because unless he wins the Derby, it's a total non-Todd move. I was shocked he was talking as long as he was about Competitive Edge. I think, and this is my speculation, I think Pletcher really thinks a lot of that horse, almost to the point where the normal Todd rules don't apply to him.
Right.
But I guess he'd like to be represented. It would just seem, I'm a little confused by the fact that, you know, unless Stanford has something wrong about him that we don't know, why Stanford isn't running in the Preakness instead of one of these two-week wheelbacks.
Right. Now,
maybe that work was so bad.
True. It's possible, because you look at some of the things and you hear it just wasn't all indication. The reason they pulled him out was that last work down there was a disaster.
Right.
Illman brought it up, and thank you. You guys did a great job Saturday, by the way, and Friday.
As did you.
And Friday. But Illman said that you brought up the idea after the Pat Day of the Met Mile as like an outside chance. And at first when I heard it, I said, well, look, I mean, it would be amazing if it happened, but it's not really going to happen. Well, it looks like, I mean, there's a little bit of smoke there. It's not, he hasn't announced one way or another. In your heart of hearts, both of you, do you really think, I just can't imagine him running in the Met.
Oh, I can, and here's why. And I know Mike's shaking his head. But, and you tweeted earlier today, Mike, the last Met Mile winner, a three-year-old Met Mile winner was Honor and Glory in 89,
excuse me,
96. 96, of course. Well, Pletcher either was working for Lucas then, or had just recently left. So he was probably close to all of that. Secondly, and this to me, this is the big part of the equation I'm not sure about, but I'm sure it's part of Pletcher's thinking, is when Honor and Glory won, beating Afternoon Delights, it was one of those Mandela Burt Bacharach horses. Mm-hmm.
There was a dead heat for second.
He was getting 13 pounds. There was a major weight concession to the three-year-olds. I don't know if it's been a while since a three-year-old has tried, but if Competitive Edge is going to get in at 112 and you know, private zone and Bayern and Tonalist are going to run at you know, $120 or $122. That's going to get Pletcher's attention. He might like to take a shot at those horses getting double digit pounds.
What do you think?
Well, my biggest takeaway from it, even the talk about the possibility of competitive edge running there, my biggest takeaway is, boy, it seems like a real indictment on Palace Malice. A real indictment on Palace Malice, considering this has been one of the first targets for Palace Malice since we first heard the horse was coming back.
Yeah. No, I agree completely.
Why would he take any horse against Palace Malice?
And run him against.
Especially one of these three-year-olds that clearly that was never the plan with competitive edge, you know? So he's got to think, boy, I'm really uncertain about whether Palace Malice is going to run. I got to look at what else might be able to do some damage in that field. And, you know, maybe that's why he starts thinking about a three-year-old. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we're in the days where we're going to see those kinds of weight breaks that you got 20 years ago for being a three-year-old in any handicap, because for me it seems like the handicap spreads are 6 pounds from high weight to low weight. So I don't know. I mean, if he gets a 12-pound or even an 8-pound break on the favorites in the field, you know, I can see him taking a stab at it. It just seems like an odd place of all places.
I agree with all of you. You know, it's an atypical handicap race. In the respect that it's not a fall turf race where they're all like four and up and you're handicapping or weighting them based on their recent performances. It's like a according to the scale, what the three-year-olds are mandated or supposed to carry at this time of year versus older, and mm-hmm. a racing secretary like Martin Panzer, Dan Eidson, will just play off of that scale as they see fit. And yes, that's where the tight weight ranges kick in, because they might use the scale as a guide, but their primary guide is to try to attract as many horses to the race, and that's where they start, you know, cutting people breaks perhaps on occasion. But, and I don't think they're going to weight Bayern or Tonalist super high. They just might weight competitive edge super low, and then in some cases it could become a question of, you know, how light can Johnny V ride.
Right, exactly. I don't know what he rides at.
I think the two pieces to that whole puzzle, the Palace Malice part, he's entered Sunday in the Diablo.
Yep.
At Belmont.
Right. Which is a bit of an audible, since they couldn't make the Westchester.
That's going six. That seems right. Really sharp, yeah. For this horse. It's also interesting to note, and maybe this is me just going pie in the sky now, he's entered he's nominated for the Dixie next weekend at Pimlico, the two-turn grass race. I don't think he may have debuted on grass early on at Saratoga, but he's not really run on grass in the past. He's bred for it, though. Curlin, Royal Anthem, the whole nine. Clearly, it's a foot problem with this horse. That's the big thing. That's why he missed the Westchester. Should you, for some reason, if he does not run Sunday and you run him in the Dixie and that's his prep for the Met Mile, say he loves the grass. They also run the Manhattan on Belmont Stakes Day. Do you have to run him in the Met? At this point, he's won that race. He's won the Belmont Stakes. Now, if you can get a grade one on grass, now you're looking at, I don't know that, do two Met Miles do more for him from a stud standpoint than, you know, the Met, the Belmont, and a grade one on grass?
Great question.
Again, just pie in the sky.
I mean, to answer your question directly, no. The more diverse resume, which includes one Met Mile, would trump, in my opinion, you know, the two Met Miles.
Right.
Well, but remember, though, the original plan was the Breeders' Cup Classic. So that would mean
I feel like
to
it's
some extent a deviation from that.
Well, but I think it's more a matter of now you're dealing with, like, look, the feet aren't ideal, you know, and if it's a foot issue, you know the grass is going to be kinder on his feet than the dirt will be.
I don't know what his foot situation is, but my gut reaction because I didn't know he was nominated for the Dixie until you just said it. My gut reaction is he's nominated in case the race gets rained off. But
fair.
But you make a good point about the Curlin Royal Anthem business, because he is bred for turf. pretty well or better than most. I'm guessing maybe it's something Pletcher said, gee, I'd like to find out at some point during a quiet part of the year. And just the way things are working out kind of oddly for maybe he's playing that card or thinking about playing that card a little earlier than he had planned.
Right.
But, you know, it'd be so many unanswered questions with a bunch of these Pletcher horses.
And the other thing, it goes back to what Mike was saying, and Illman had said it earlier, that I think Palace Malice's direction will be more or less decided based on what this competitive edge situation is. If they really think that he's got a shot and they're going to run him in the Met, you're not going to run Palace Malice against him.
You think it's that? You think competitive edge is the one that's going to determine it?
I think
the other way around.
I think at this point now, because there's the fact that this, because you don't need to run competitive edge even if Palace Malice isn't doing well or isn't coming into this in an ideal spot. You don't need to run competitive edge. You can run him in the Woody.
Right. Sure.
Except, and here's, I mean, again, so much remains to be seen. We also don't know whether 2 weeks off can go a mile and an eighth effectively. What if he can't?
Right.
Then he is a very logical Woody Stevens horse.
Probably the favorite. Mm-hmm.
Probably the favorite. Whereas I think Todd thinks competitive edge can do anything. So, you know, he may be playing off of 2 weeks off. He may be playing off of Palace Malice. I will say I don't think Pletcher would have any qualms about running two horses in a short field grade one, even if one of them is Palace Malice.
Fair.
I think, you know, he's got too many horses to be looking to duck himself. That ship has sailed in his barn.
I think the other thing, and we'll button it up on this and get into the races, but Dan brought up something else where, let's say American Pharoah doesn't win the Preakness.
Hmm.
And you go and you win the Met Mile with competitive edge. All of a sudden, three-year-old is obviously up in the air, and overall, horse of the year is still up in the air, because that's something that you can make the argument you've already got the upper hand. I know so many people put so much weight into the Derby. I may be one of the few that says it's still just another race. I know it's still bigger in stature, obviously, but for me, it's not an end-all, be-all that the three-year-old winner of that race should be the automatic, you know, leader in the clubhouse. If that scenario played out, and American Pharoah didn't return until, let's say, the Haskell or whatever it is, and maybe that would be the meeting of the two of them, and this horse, competitive edge, should he win the Met Mile, I would almost look at that as, all right, we've got a toss-up now, because he would have beaten Private Zone. He would have beaten Tonalist. I would say we've got an even race right now for three-year-old and for Horse of the Year. So maybe that's just something else that they're at least keeping in the back of their mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always bonus points for a three-year-old when he beats older, but I do think that the Triple Crown races do trump those other races. Otherwise, we might have seen Bayern win the Horse
right.
of the Year last year.
Good point.
But what I take away from all of that is, you know, these three-year-old divisional races are wide open until a horse takes basically two of the three Triple Crown races at least, or follows up a Derby win with a Haskell or Travers win.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with all that. And you know, really, you don't have to go that far back to see a year where it looked like, all right, three-year-old division seems to be okay. Orb wins the Derby. Oxbow wins the Preakness. Palace Malice wins the Belmont. Well, we'll get clarity in the Travers, and then We'll Take Charge wins and goes on to win three-year-olds. So, I mean, we still have a long way to go, but it's fun to at least talk about, and we'll see, obviously, next week. And I think things will have a little bit more clarity on a couple things, because Palace Malice will have run or will be getting ready to run. We'll have the Preakness coming up and whatnot. So let's get into some races for this weekend first, though. If you are not playing yet, you need to get involved. We've only had one weekend of the main Public Handicapper contest. It's free to play, publichandicapper.com. It's four races a weekend you go through. You don't need to play them all. You just need to play 60 races over the course of the contest life, including all of the Breeders' Cup races. It ends on Breeders' Cup Saturday. All things considered, you can get NHC seats out of it. You can get a little bit of cash. You can get Formulator, yada, yada, yada. Go on publichandicapper.com, take a look. The first race for this weekend on Saturday is the 9th at Belmont Park. It's the Grade 1 Man of War for 4-year-olds and up, going a mile and 3/8 on the grass. Mike, we'll let you start, and then we'll let Eric go second. I'll bring up the rear. We got a field of seven. Do you like anyone in particular?
I do.
Okay.
You know, this is one where you got a couple horses, a few horses that have faced each other. You know, I always like to look for, of the ones that have faced each other, the one that seems to have won a better race, but in a more quiet fashion, and that I'm going to get a better price on. So of those three, you got Hardest Core, who was last seen in the Breeders' Cup turf. He was facing Imagining and Twilight Eclipse, who are your favorite and second choice on the morning line for the Man of War. I actually think Hardest Core ran the better race of the three, best race of the three. He broke a little slow. He rushed up down the hill. He went wide on the first turn. He was pulling the whole way. He was keen throughout the whole backstretch. He was wide around, I guess, three turns. He came into the lane as the leader before getting caught late. I thought he ran a huge race. You know, I certainly wouldn't say that it was due to the jockey, Aero Luis Vaz, I think he just wouldn't settle, and he was chasing a ridiculous, and then overtook a ridiculous long shot in Star Spangled Heat on the backstretch. He ran a huge race that looks a lot better than what you see as an eighth finish, you know, nearly five lengths behind the winner. He's had some time since then. You know, if you go back to his other races, the Arlington Million, he beat some good horses. I think if he runs his big race, you know, he's going to be facing a number of horses with some question marks, and he's the one I'm hoping to get at 4-1 or up.
Eric Wing.
First of all, let me say that I find it intriguing from a kind of a gossip standpoint that Hyper will be running for the always interesting combination of Chad Brown and Ken Ramsey.
On the heels of last Saturday's.
Yes, indeed. So perhaps we shouldn't feel certain that this horse is actually going to run. But no, getting...
Well, Chad doesn't have any other horses in here, so I think we're good.
All joking aside, what Mike just said about Hardest Core, I couldn't have written it better myself, because I was going to make many of the same points. The only thing I'll disagree with Mike on is I think he was being a little kind about the trip that Hardest Core had in the Breeders' Cup turf. I would just call it a trip from hell. I don't know if it was jockey error. It could have just been a case where it looked to me like the jockey just said, entering the clubhouse turn, the hell with it. Might as well just go now. Yeah. We're going now.
Sure.
Now, if he did that consciously, thinking it was a wise move, then it was not wise at all. He might have just gotten tired fighting the horse at that point. So my thinking is this. You'll notice that Aero Luis Vaz is not riding now. Instead, it's Luis Saez, who rode the horse with great success back when he was in the Kieran McLaughlin barn. This could be either dissatisfaction with Vaz. It could be Saez being viewed as a stronger rider who's more able to get a difficult horse like Hardest Core to relax. At any rate, there's a new jockey on board. The trainer, Eddie Graham, was quoted as saying, you know, gee, he might need one this year. I'm not sure. Well, all I'll say is he sure didn't need one last year when he came back off the bench. He ran very well, albeit in just a three other than at Parks, but he kind of validated those performances, obviously, at Delaware and later in the Arlington Million. So I think, you know, his race is considerably better, at least with the Breeders' Cup turf. Imagining ran great last time, but, you know, he and Twilight Eclipse are often close together. In ability, and I'd rather take a shot that Hardest Core is going to fire his A race, and there just might be more upside there if he can behave himself a little bit more in the earlier stages of the race.
Also, I forgot to say he loves Belmont Park too.
Yeah, I mean, Hardest Core figures in here. If you, there's a part of me though that is poor as that trip was that he had, and I'm going to say it was a poor ride, like you say, maybe it was just a combination of things. I don't know how good he actually is. The Arlington Million, I thought, was an absolute joke last year. It was magician after the good magician. He was a little bit off over in Europe before he came over here, and then consequently was retired after that. You look at the rest of that field, side glance, there wasn't much in there. I know he ran good in the turf. I can't argue that. He ran better than it looks on paper. I still don't want to take a shortish price on him. I've always been a fan of Twilight Eclipse. I'm getting a little sick of his deal. He should have won last time in the Pan American. You finally got away from main sequence, and you couldn't get the job done. Maybe he moved a little early on the far turn. But still, and imagining, he looks finally like a professional racehorse. He's not goofy with the lead changes now. I think that also coincides with this new running style. He's not on the lead now. He's coming from off of it. That being said, again, I know imagining. Yeah. I can't possibly
right.
back you
He's
there.
Seven. How is he going to improve off that last effort?
I don't know. Yeah. Dynamic Sky.
At 95?
Dynamic Sky, never liked him, never been a fan. Comes the Dream, I think, is cheap. War Dancer, I've always been a fan, but I'm sick of his antics, too. He just doesn't like to get the job done. Maybe Mott needed to get a little bit of fitness into him. Long story short, I'm going with Hyper. I'm going with Chatta and the Ramses. He hasn't been out in almost, what are we looking at, a year and a half. That being said, Brown, past 5 years, turf routes, 400 days or more layoff, 6 for 11 with a 405 ROI. The other thing I love about this horse, I think there is a little bit of speed in here. He should be able to sit in that second flight, I think, with the new imagining. I'm going to call him that from now on because it's a different running style. The other part, you look at Hyper, I know this is a ridiculous layoff. All of his other layoff lines, he's come back and fired fresh in each and every one of them. I think he's a horse that's going to be in a good spot. Johnny V takes them out. I think that's positive. And I know I'm going to get a price in a field where I don't love anyone else. Hyper's 10-1 on the morning line. I think I'm going to come pretty darn close to that, maybe 7 or 8 at the lightest anyway. So that's where I'm going in the Man of War.
Like it.
The 11th on opening day at Monmouth Park is the Decathlon. It's a massive field. We have 14 going out, 6 furlongs on the main track. For three-year-olds and up, Mike, you mentioned there's a bunch of horses that are cross-centered. You're going to want to go into Formulator and take a look. I'm going to leave that up to you guys. That's on you. We can't hold your hand with everything.
Yeah.
You go on. You look at what you need to see. You can take a look at that. I think you can go a number of ways. The one thing I will say is there is speed everywhere in this race.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, where'd you wind up?
Oh, you want me to start again? Okay.
You want me to start? I'll start. Let's go the other way. Okay. Let's go the other way. Yeah. I'll go first. We'll go Wing second.
Snake in it?
Hogan third.
Okay.
There is a ton of speed signed down in here, and I guess this horse, there's no guarantee that AP Indian can sit. But I'm hopeful that the turn back dulls him up a little bit, and that may sound a little bit bizarre, but I'm hopeful that takes away a little bit of that early speed that he's had in the past. If he can sit off that 102 buyer, I'm afraid people are going to see that and jump to him, and that's entirely reasonable. He's 2-for-2 in sprints. Arnold Delacour, past year, dirt route to sprint, 3-for-5, 4 of them hitting the board, 288 ROI. I just think if this one has any ability to sit, he's going to work out the best possible scenario. The concern is that he can't sit and he has to go to the lead. I'm willing to find out. I don't want anything less from a wagering standpoint on my own, less than 4 or 5 to 1. I'm going to wait. I probably won't put a pick in for this race. I will be picking Hyper in the PH race. I'm probably not picking any horse in this race just because I think it can go any number of ways. But if I had to, I'd pick AP Indian.
Yeah, you know, he's logical.
I thought we were snaking here.
He's skipping
you,
right
you,
over.
You, go ahead. Please go.
Okay. you're welcome to go ahead, Mike. No, gosh, it's a great betting race. I hope the field stays largely intact despite all these cross-entered horses that Matt was talking about. One of the horses that seems perfectly logical if he stays in the race is Piquant, who's 2-for-2 with a pair of 97 buyers since being claimed by the Richard Stocklosa barn. That barn is 4-for-10 on the year and usually pretty formidable in at Monmouth, and Jersey Joe Bravo is taking the mount. The horse I want to play in this race, though, and I might be viewing this a little bit with my heart, not my head, but one of my very favorite horses is in this race, and I think he can absolutely win, and that's Moments Notiz, one of the three David Jacobson horses. I've been following this horse basically since he's been running at Indiana Downs, and he was just a killer there. And then Jacobson got a hold of him, you know, having run a couple of, you know, low-level claiming races, and he just, you know, went through the New York starter allowance races like a hot knife through butter here. And but this horse has some quality, and he's getting back to his best races. I mean, you see his lifetime best is a 103, and lately he's been doing 101 and 96. But the thing with Moments Notice is if you give him six furlongs and a dry track, he is tough. I mean, lifetime he's 7 for 11 in that scenario with a second and a couple of thirds mixed in. The only time he didn't run well in that scenario, the comment line said off 3 lengths slow. So, you know, to me, at 6 to 1, I think he can turn the tables on Piquant. He probably needed his last race. You know, Jacobson doesn't usually run off 2.5 month layoffs. He's been working. He's worked twice since then, which signals some intent on Jacobson's part, if I'm right about that. And, you know, I hope he stays in this race because I think he can win it. And beyond that, I don't. There are so many different ways. I like the horse you mentioned, Matt, and I think Favorite Tale is going to be, you know, has some quality speed for this level, and it'll be tough under Paco. But Moments Notice is my horse in here.
The other thing I like about Moments Notice is the running style. With all this other speed signed on, I think this one can sit 2-3 lengths off and then make that run and pick up. Once everyone else is tiring, you put in the run. So I think Fitz nice.
He can win on the lead. He can win from off of it. He's won plenty of races both ways.
No, I like it. Mike?
I love this race. First of all, I hope it stays together. 14 horses. You can make a case for so many different ones. You know, I almost kind of wonder where the betting's going to go. And one of the things I was going to say about your horse, AP Indian, Matt, is I would actually be surprised if he does not end up the favorite.
I think he's going to be the favorite. Yeah. I think people are going to see that 102, and they just immediately... People love numbers.
Yeah. I mean, here's another number for you. 7 for 7 in the exacta.
Right.
You know, here's one more number for you. The morning line favorite is coming off of a layoff of nearly 6 months.
Right.
And a dull effort.
Right.
You know, so I think AP Indian... The biggest concern I'd have from him, you said the trip. For me, it's the price. In a 14-horse field where I think almost anything can happen and I can make a case for a bunch, he might be 7-2. And that's my main concern. One other interesting side note that I mentioned to you a little earlier, Matt. AP Indian is the 5-year-old older half-brother to Tiz Shady, who is running the Peter Pan. So...
Fun fact.
A little fun fact. You got that family could very well take town 2 stakes races this weekend and on Saturday. You know, because of that, because there's a lot of really good horses in here, because a lot of them are win machines like Moments Notice, who is the kind of horse you'd love to own, you know, always shows up with a good effort, especially on a dry track. I kind of want to take a stab at ones that might be a little bit more of a price that I think I can make a case for improving. And there's 2 in particular. I'm going to look and see what the scratches look like, since there are some cross-centered horses. And I'm going to go 1 of 2 ways. I'm going to either going to go with number 11, Javert.
We called him Javert. I think he fits in here perfectly.
Javert. For Cathal Lynch. Fourth start of the year, as a 6-year-old. From a running style standpoint, he seems like it should be a perfect race for him. He will get a good trip from somewhat of an outside post. He's 4 for 6 at Monmouth. He's 5 for 11 at the distance, 8 for 11 in the exacta. I think the race sets up fantastically for him. And I think he might be a little overlooked at 8-1 morning line. He might be even higher than that. So I love him. The other one I love in 15-1 morning line. I hope he stays in. I hope the race stays together. Number 7, Yes, I'm Lucky. Coming off a dull effort, his first start as a 4-year-old at Gulfstream Park, sprinting on the turf in the Silks Run. But that was his first start of the year as a 4-year-old off nearly a year layoff. Needed the race, throw it out. Seemingly had been a turf runner, but if you go back to his his debut, and then his second start and his fourth start. He's 2 for 3 sprinting on the dirt. He's 1 for 2 on the dirt at Monmouth. Why not? Why not a horse like Yes, I'm Lucky? Eddie Pleza, fantastic going turf to dirt in sprints. I won't give you the stats, but look it up in Formulator. This is a move he does really well. And, of course, he does very well at Monmouth Park.
I like it. I can't argue with any of that. And anytime you're going to get a price, obviously, like that's a positive. I hate to already say this. We're going to be giving some short shrift to the Golden Gate race just because we're running a little bit long. Yeah. And I don't think, Mike, I know you and I don't have great opinions on it. We'll talk to Eric and get his. But let's go into the eighth at Santa Anita. It's the Grade 3 American. It is for 3-year-olds and up. They're going a mile on the grass. We got a field of 8. And the big story in this one is Dick Mandela's import, Bala Bali, making his first North American start. He's a Brazilian Triple Crown winner. He battled laminitis, and it's been a minor miracle that he's back here. He's 9-5 on the morning line, and it sounds like he's the real deal. I don't know. I don't know about you guys. 9-5, God bless you. I'm not touching this thing with a 10-foot pole.
Agree.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he, even if he is the goods, and he's as good as his accomplishments in Brazil would suggest, he does have a poor post position. He's the morning line favorite. It's also not clear to me, just on the face of it, whether he's a better miler or a mile and a half horse. Longer, and while it may not matter in Brazil, that type of thing tends to matter here. So, in the absence of knowing that yet, and I'll let Mike discuss whatever Mandela's Formulator stats are off, 180 to 365 day layoffs. But my sense is they're okay, but not great. I'm looking elsewhere, and the horse that I landed on, just to take the ball and run with it a little bit, is Gabriel Charles from Jeff Mullins' barn. And that's only because, you know, the rest of the field, you've got Bala Bali, and you've got the Talco winning prize group. And, you know, they're okay. I don't think they're anything special. Gabriel Charles came in off of about a year and a half layoff and ran what looks to be a non-threatening second, but he did so behind a Phil D'Amato horse who's probably cut out to be a really good grass miler in Midnight Stroll. And to me, there's no shame in that second place finish off the bench by Gabriel Charles. And to me, at anything close to the 8-1 morning line odds, he would be my play in this race.
I'm going to jump in real quick because I'm with you. I went with Gabriel Charles. This is one that I'll pick him in PH, and I'm probably going to play him in with my own money as well, just because I remember him as a 3-year-old. I thought he was really, really good when he won the Del Mar Derby, when he ran second in Twilight Derby, second in the Oceanside. I think he's got a ton of ability. You mentioned Midnight Storm. Midnight Storm got a 106 buyer last time out. What's that?
I think I called him Stroll by mistake. Thank you for...
Don't matter.
That'll increase your grade at the end of the program.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Midnight Storm for D'Amato. If you watch that entire race last out, which you can do in Formulator, this is a horse that, if that is really what the horse is, that's a Breeders' Cup mile runner.
Yeah, he was a freak.
That was, he didn't break a sweat, and he ran off the page, front running score, and ever since D'Amato's gotten a hold of him, he's become an absolute monster. So I'm not going to hold that against Gabriel Charles. I thought he ran a good race. Second off the bench for Mullins, I think he can take a step forward. He should get some pace in front of him. I think at 8-1, I'm running to the window. I think he's going to probably even go off, maybe even above that. So yeah, I'm with you on Gabriel Charles.
I like it. He's one I considered in here. You know, I'll add. You know, Midnight Storm looked very impressive. He did it all on the front end, and Gabriel Charles was moving. One of the only ones moving well late. You know, there wasn't a whole lot since Midnight Storm won by 7 and change. You know, it's kind of hard to close into a loose lead horse like that. And so, he absolutely can step forward off that effort. He's one I considered. I actually ended up landing on 7, Home Run Kitten, partly because I thought there would be some good pace in the race. I think the stretch out. First off, the claim, former Baffert runner, War Academy, who, fun fact, trivia question, was your beaten favorite in the Arkansas Derby 2 years ago when he pulled up and didn't finish the race, is trying turf for the first time, first in the barn of Emily Mode. I think that horse is going to go early. I think he's going to set a really strong early pace. It's going to set it up for a horse to come out of it from off the pace. And I like Home Run Kitten, who I think is best at a flat mile, even though he ran in the Breeders' Cup turf sprint. I don't think he's as good as a turf sprinter, and I don't know if he's as good down the hill as he is at a flat mile. I think the race sets up well for him. Matt, I heard on the air on DRF Live, you thought it was a negative that Joe Talamo is on him and not Gary Stevens. I think it was actually the other way around. I think Talamo is the regular rider for this horse, and I think in the last race in San Simeon, Talamo chose Sweet Swap. Is that the horse's
name?
Sweet Swap. Chose Sweet Swap over Home Run Kitten, maybe partly because he thinks Home Run Kitten is better on a flat mile. I think from a class standpoint, Home Run Kitten was running against horses like Ring Weekend, Summer Front, Za Approval, Avanzare, even Alert Bay, who I think many of them, aside from this first in North America horse, I think any of those would be favored in this race. I think from a class standpoint, he fits. I think he'll get a good setup, and I'm hoping to get a decent price.
Very good. I like it all. And let's wrap it up with our fourth and final PH race. We kind of tipped the hand a little bit. It's the seventh at Golden Gate. It's the $50,000 Golden Poppy. Going a mile and 16th on the grass. At first glance, I said there's a ton of speed in here. It's a race that I don't have a really good feel for. It's not one that I'll be making a pick for in PH. I guess if I had to make a pick, I'd go to the outside. The 10 Humoristica going out for Dick Mandela. He's sending her up north. But having said that, this is a race that is a complete punt for me.
I'll say... I agree, Matt. I think there's a lot of speed in the race. Humoristica, I would be against, even though, I mean, it's no great shakes to be against a 10-1 morning line shot. But to me, this looks, you know, being out of half bridled, this looks like a desperate attempt to get black type on this horse.
It absolutely is, which is why I picked her.
Yeah.
Who, like the siblings, aren't very good. But anyway, so it's funny, you guys see it half full. I see it half empty with Humoristica. I was looking to the closers, because I just don't see much in this race. And the one I like best is Agua Fria, from Neil Drysdale. Now, ran a fast race going down the hill from a disadvantageous rail post. The races before that, while carrying more weight, are pretty good. So with the weight reduction, I think this horse is easily capable of running the 85 or so that it's going to take to win this race from a buyer's standpoint. The only other thing I like that I'll point out, if you look at the kind of jockey trainer stats on the lower right of the horse, it makes it look like, Drysdale and J.J. Hernandez are awful together, and that's really not true. Going back to a year and a half, it might be true, but it's a case of small data sample. If you go back 5 years, the two of them together are 3-14, which is 21%, but 2-6 together in grass races, and Drysdale shipping up in general to Golden Gate is 12-57, good for 21%. So to me, I don't feel strongly about this horse, but race flow and ability would lead me in Agua Fria's direction.
I like it all.
Mm-hmm.
I like it all. Again, it's a race that I don't have much of an opinion on, and I won't be playing in PH, but everyone else, you got to get involved. I don't know if you haven't and you're listening. You listen to the same thing every Friday. Why aren't you playing?
Right.
PublicHandicapper.com. It's free to play. Get involved. Make sure you have your NHC membership, your tour card. That way you're eligible for the NHC seats.
Real quick, what are the standings? I know Pete and I both had Divisadero.
Both had Divisadero. I had nothing. And okay. Let's take a look.
Did Pete have anything else besides? I had a cap horse run second and shook up.
Pete Fornital is 1-4 with $11.20. Mike Hogan's 1-4 with $11.20. Okay. I am 0-3 minus $6.
Okay.
So very early on, and the leader at this point through one weekend is at $35.20, again, very early.
Sure.
But the beauty of this going forward is you don't need to play every race. You just got to get in 60 to be eligible, and they it wraps up. And that's playing all the Breeders' Cup races.
And if you start this week, you're ahead of Matt.
That's right. You will be at $0.
Yeah, tied, but with three games in hand, essentially,
right? You will be up on
it. No, because Matt's
minus
six.
Oh,
so,
okay. All right.
It fluctuates. So plus two or plus whatever your win is, and it takes away your your losses.
You can skip a race, and it does not count against you.
Right.
You if you pick and lose, you minus two.
So I'm in the hole early on, but that's all right. We got a long way to go, and I made it clear I'm going to be more picky and choosy with this one.
So. Matt, you've dug yourself out of much bigger holes than this, I must say.
I have from time to time. From time to time. I was going to say $6. I think I can come back from that. Mr. Wing, thank you for filling in.
Hey, my pleasure. And let me just say, Matt, before we say goodbye, I was a little concerned early.
Uh-oh.
A little too familiar calling
Hogan.
Calling him Hogan.
Yeah.
Also, just for a split second concern, you were copying my American Stakes pick.
Oh, boy.
But after I've weighed all the factors, and not incidentally, your proper correction of me for getting Midnight Storm's name wrong, combined with your always excellent grammar and voice modulation, an easy A. A all the way for Mr. Bernier.
That's an A right there.
I think you're an easy grader.
Wow.
I think he just buttered me up by backing me up on
That's why I call him Hogan, though. Yeah, that's why I refer to him as Hogan.
We're on brown-nosing the teacher
we're
there.
We're on sports terms or sports names basis here.
Next week, we're still TBD on how we're going to make this thing work, so you're going to want to stay tuned.
Yeah.
Just because Pete is going to be out at Santa Anita for the Preakness Handicapping tournament there. And I will be down at Pimlico from Tuesday on. So
I will say, I will go on record right now and say we being Pete and myself, and hopefully you, Matt, if we're able to work it, we'll do a Tuesday podcast.
Okay.
And then Pete and I are doing two different webinars covering the same topic on next Thursday. There's one at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time and one at 3 p.m. Eastern time. You can sign up for that. I'll be tweeting out the links to sign up shortly. And we're going runner by runner through the Preakness field once the card is out. So that's Thursday. And then we'll, if possible, do a podcast doing essentially the same sort of thing and covering the PH races either Thursday or Friday. TBD who all will be involved.
Beautiful. So obviously stay tuned to all of us. Thank you again to Mr. Wing for filling in. Until Tuesday, best of luck throughout the weekend.